Welcome back to Tea Time, everyone. We are so happy and so excited because today we have the amazing, the beautiful, the talented, the funny as fuck.
Funny as fuck.
Lisa and Walter.
That's the best intro I've ever gotten.
Shut up.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Thanks.
I'm so honored.
Thanks, mm-mm.
I'll come around with you everywhere you go. And just
please do.
You. I'd be so happy.
Thank you.
Can I admit something to you?
Please.
I'm sure you get this all the time. But when it's not that I didn't know, but when I actually connected all the dots in my head about all of the work that you've done and all of the things that I've seen you in, and then I was like, oh my God, Parent Trap.
Because it seems so long ago.
Oh my God.
Like, doesn't it feel like I should be 80?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Because when I think about being like the little girl that I was watching it, but it was just like, oh my God, she was in Parent Trap.
I was.
The best.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And mostly because, I mean, first of all, the residual checks have been pretty good over the years.
Yeah, beautiful.
Not as good since they changed all the formulas. It used to be a lot better. And then they're like, oh, VHS, we're going to give you a ton of money. DVDs, less so. Now you're on cable, not as much. Mm-hmm, and streaming, here's $1.50 and a Hot Pocket.
Me.
Exactly, yeah. Right? But forget about that because that's the less important thing. The most important thing is the response that I get still from kids that grew up with it, from adults now that it's meaningful to. And, you know, kids especially, people who were children then who felt like they didn't belong, kids that were queer or parents were divorced or, you know, othered in some way, so responded to my character. And, you know, we've done some kind of like deep dramaturgical, is that a word?
Yeah.
I made it
and
up.
We're going to define it right here.
There you go. we did a deep dive into it, a girlfriend and me one time, and we were like, maybe because Chessie kept the secret of the kids and loved them and helped them and wasn't judgy or like, what's wrong with you? She was like, no, the parents are wrong. You're perfect and fine and I love you. And so kids always felt very accepted by my character. And then that translated onto me. And it's just...
Because she was so warm and warm and loving and kind, which you are too. And I mean, just meeting you recently at D23, I was like, oh my gosh, she's such a light. But remember...
Thanks, Miranda.
You're welcome. Remember the part where you see... Okay, I don't remember their names. Annie.
Hallie and Annie.
Hallie,
I am Annie.
And you see the other one, and you get so... I was like, oh my God.
Just gave myself chills.
Yeah.
You know, I manipulate myself with that scene.
Wait, what?
You just said that.
Okay.
Just saying that I am Annie.
Yeah.
Right? And can I hug her? People who come to see... I'm doing stand-up again on my hiatuses, and... especially women of this age group will be like, can I get a hug? And I'm like, of course. Anytime I meet someone and the first thing they say is, I love you from that movie. I love that movie. I say, do you want a hug? And they're, yes! Like their whole being just explodes. And I'm like, I have that kind of grace. I have that kind of ability to give someone joy for a minute. Yeah. I saw you do it. Can I just tell you something and brag on you? And then I swear I'll come back to how wonderful I am.
But please do.
So when we were at D23, I have a friend who's really active in union work. He was a guy that when I first started being a union activist, he taught me like how to fill out a resolution form and ask our union to do things. In this case, it was I wanted to get protections for our female and people who can have children, members to be able to have protections in states with heartbeat laws.
Love that.
So nothing was being done. We're talking about when the laws first started popping up in 2017-18. And I was like, this is potentially quite dangerous. We're going to have members go into states that they don't know what the laws are. Mm-hmm. And they're going there and God forbid there's a sexual assault. God forbid they get into trouble. There's an emergency. They're pregnant. They don't know it. They're having a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. That happened to me. I was on a location and was miscarrying one of my pregnancies in between my four kids that I know of.
Hilarious.
Oh, God, it's such an old joke. But
that's okay.
I needed to go and get a DNC.
Yeah.
I needed help. And if I was in a state where they had these laws and was afraid to go, I could have died, hemorrhaged.
Yes.
So this guy was really helpful. He got it. He was like, let me help you out. is like that for everybody. If you have an issue with the union, you call me. I'm like, talk to Ron.
Done and done.
So he has a son who's autistic, and he's a big fan of yours, Raven. And he was like, look, I know this is a big ask, but if you could get John to meet Raven.
That's who that was.
When I tell you that him meeting you made this kid's week, month, year life. I have not stopped hearing from his dad to thank me. I'm like, don't thank me. She was like, please tell her that the energy she gave, the time she gave him, it meant so, so much to him.
I'm going to be 100. I didn't know the connection.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was.
I
adored that little boy. Well, he was a grown boy.
Yeah, he's like a grown teen.
He's like a grown teen. I adored that teen, but I also adored the shade he had because someone else famous came up to him. He was like, "Yeah, Raven." I was like, "Ooh."
Yeah.
He was so genuine. His love was amazing. I didn't connect that, and now I know.
See, and to me, this is how meaningful that was to me. Not just that you gave that gift to the young man and for me, to his dad, who's been so helpful to all of us in our union, but that you didn't even know, and I saw you do it anyway. Like, I felt no need, you know, I had one eyeball on to make sure he got a little bit like, hey, nice to meet you. I didn't have to. I looked over there. You were like deeply engaged in a conversation.
We had a great time.
And and I was like, oh my God, A, I love her, and anything she asked me to do, I'm going to do.
I love you.
That's why I'm here on a Sunday.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And B, that's how you get to understand a person's heart.
Yeah.
Like, you see, this is who that human being is, not the actor playing this, but I see who you are.
And we can circle that back around because people want hugs from you. And when I met you at that D23, both of us were like, we love her. And like she said, deep diving and understanding your history in the industry, there's a lot of people who have as many titles as you, and I don't want to hug them at all. But emit love and light through the screen in such a way, which is why I think you've had such a successful, consistent career. Mm-hmm. You have vibrated in our community in a way where these moments of our age bracket and even older and younger will come to you. Even with your amazing work on the show that you're on now, it's like, that's the kind of teacher I want. Do you know what I mean?
And when people say, I think that it's wonderful when people look at your work and say, I feel like I know you, or I feel like we're already best friends, or I feel like you'd be that girl for me. Exactly. Like, you'd get in the car and we'd roll.
Yes.
Like, that's that friend that's
I would go in club with you.
Yeah, not what are we doing, but just what car are we taking? Do I need a weapon? You know, like,
I got it. It's concealed. You want it in this purse?
Exactly. I'm going to come back around because I have the kind of brain that if I don't finish the thought, that's all I'm going to think about for the rest of the day.
We got you.
When we were doing that scene that you were talking about, I am Annie, I'm the other one.
Yeah.
I was trained as an actor, like Shakespeare and the Greeks and all of that coming up. People don't know me from that. They either know me from doing half-hour comedy, or years ago it was just stand-up. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't understand that I was trained and I knew what I was doing. But you do stuff as an actor, emotional journeys, before you do the scene.
Yeah.
So in the I Am Annie scene, I remember that I was sitting quiet in a corner. Dennis Quaid was lurking somewhere, and I wasn't drooling over him for that minute.
Of course
I was just
not.
Sitting
of course
in the corner. And thinking about the times that I had to leave my baby girl, because I did stand up after my son was about 18 months old, my oldest. And then I was doing stand up all the way through when I was pregnant with my daughter. I stopped doing gigs when she, about 3 days before I had her. Mm-hmm. I went back to work when she was 5 weeks old.
Oh my God.
Nursing, pumping into a Ziploc bag, being on these long weekend 4 or 5 days away. Then I'd come home and I would just smell her from the front door. I would just, we're mammals. Yeah. We're like, that's my young. Mm-hmm. That is my gene. And I would just hold her and smell her head. And so every time before we would shoot that scene, 72 takes over 3 days, I would be in a place where I was away from my child and I was just seeing her again.
Okay, I have some questions. Let's just break this down. The first question I have is, what compelled you to leave your child at such a young age to go working? Was it an addiction to work? Did you need to? That's my first question. And then for the record, I want to ask why the fuck 72 takes, but you'll remember that question.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, babe.
First question, I needed to. I never took any money from, my family didn't really have money. My mother was a public school teacher. My father worked for the government. He was a physicist for NASA, but they don't make very much money. It's mm-hmm. still a government grade 18 job. And he had a second family and more kids. Wow. Mm-hmm. And they had a house. Mm-hmm. But okay. I paid for my own school. I worked three jobs. There was never a time in my life where I didn't work three jobs. Wow. I waited tables. I typed Catholic philosophical journals, transcribed them, sometimes from Latin. Whoa. At a time when nobody knew how to type, just me, because my mother insisted, and I made $2.10 an hour doing that. And I sold cosmetics at Lord & Taylor. So I was a working girl.
Yeah, you were.
All right? And I knew to a dollar how much I had in the bank every week. My my ex-husband, adore him. He's my best friend. He's at my house right now. He's waiting for me to come home and watch football. But he was... See, he was doing sales, like office supplies.
Okay.
And it was a company that did this for people who were artists. Instead of driving a cab or waiting tables, they sold office supplies. And that's what he did. I was doing these other jobs and I had a baby, right? We bought a house. Mm-hmm. I was able to save enough money for down payment, whatever that was. I think 10%, 15% we put down on a house in New Jersey. We bought a house. I was the person at that time making the income. He stopped doing the office supplies. He became my manager. I was on the road making the real money. And this was, we're talking the late 80s, and I was making between $75,000 and $100,000 a year just doing stand-up.
And this was before your movie career really took off.
Before anything.
Yeah.
I was, the way I came to LA was one of these, it was a contest. They saw me. I got an offer from the president of... Cool. Culver Studios, come out and do a TV show. So it's a golden ticket.
Yeah,
it's the Roseanne Barr, Tim Allen mm-hmm. golden ticket. You have a character you developed as a stand-up. We want to do a show around that character.
Mm, lovely.
So I came out here as the star of my own show. Yeah. But up until then, I was the one making the income. So I had to go back to work because we had a mortgage.
Yeah. Understood.
Yeah. And so then, that's why.
And then why 75 takes?
73.
Two. But 72. You were all were so close. Well, and it's not like the show I'm on now. We have three cameras that shoot everything at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
On TV, as you know, it's like we do my side, you do your side. Yeah. And for camera, you do everything at once mm-hmm. because you have an audience and their reaction is genuine. You're not going to take time to do
coverage in that way.
Is this boring for our
audience? No, I don't care. I'm enjoying it.
No, it's good.
Okay. So in movies, we do... You're shooting me. I'm doing a big crying thing and you're hopefully reacting. It's awful. I'm not acting right
she
now.
She studied for that, you yes. guys.
And I did yeah. not. I can actually
that's
cry.
Shakespeare.
Wait, hang on.
Oh, I can see it coming. Look, yeah.
Ready?
She's about to cry.
Her eyes are glossing. They're glossing right now. They actually are, you guys.
No, the lip is quivering.
The lip is quivering. That's a good one. That's good. Oh, wow.
That's good.
Okay, let's go on.
Emmys, beautiful.
You could do this too. Just make your face in the shape of how it is when you cry.
Yeah, it'll cry. Yeah. That's fair.
It helps if you think of really sad shit too.
Chop an onion.
It's so like you good. You need a tissue?
No.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, that's what the dress is for. There are times when I was doing like coverage in a movie and they shot all of the other person's stuff first, but I was doing the thing. I did a movie called Shall We Dance where
yes.
I was supposed to, they Can tried to make it? Me gain a whole bunch of weight. It's a ballroom dance movie.
Yes, we know what it is.
Yeah.
So J-Lo, Richard Gere. So anyway, I'm supposed to lose my skirt in this one scene and have the world see my giant ass and be horrified about it. And I'm like, first of all, that character would not have been horrified because she just didn't care.
Yeah.
I was personally horrified because I spent all of my time trying to lose weight to be this skinny version of the 1980s body that they wanted white women to be the whole time I was growing up. I the big ass wasn't in stock, except for J-Lo. Only hers.
She started it.
She did.
Her ass.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Italian well, asses before that were not accepted.
She started
it
for the light skinned people. Black people were already thick. Oh, they weren't.
100%.
Just to be
Dave
fair.
Wait, I used to say to me, girl, why are you. Listen to the brothers you grew up with.
Exactly.
Wear the big ass proud. What's wrong with you?
My mom is Italian and she's one of eight.
That's right.
I know. And one of my aunts only dated black men because of that situation. And she literally was like, white men just suck and black men understand it. But that's a little bit of a tangent. I have a really serious question.
No, that's right on point.
Right on
and they are not pressed by women who are strong.
Exactly. Correct. They love a strong woman.
I know. And I love my uncle. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
He is the
He's
best.
He's great.
He's the best. And my Aunt Joshua. And my Aunt Joshua is the best.
Yeah.
Joshua and Steve, hi. But wait, serious question.
What?
J-Lo.
Yeah.
I love her.
She has a crush on her.
Because
can I tell you something?
Yeah.
She literally glows. She has a perfume called Glow from across the room. I'm like, is she got an inside light?
Yeah, she does. You know, she does.
Tony Shalhoub.
Yes.
Tony Shalhoub is my friend's father.
Okay.
And Tony told me once that he saw J-Lo and she literally looked like a Roman statue. Like her skin was just so, like
she's luminescent.
But I just want to know.
Like they used to talk about Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
That's what she looks like.
And it's just the skin.
It's, I don't know what it is. I don't know.
I know what it is, you guys.
What?
Money.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I just want to know what she smells like.
Such a good question! Such a good question!
Thank you. Oh my God. Stick around.
You. I didn't mean to scare you.
No, you didn't. We love it.
You are validating me. You're making me feel, I'm redeeming myself.
A, just the way you think.
Okay.
Roses and money.
Number two. I'm walking. It was our first week of rehearsal. It's very unusual to have rehearsal time for a movie.
Yeah.
Mm. Our director, Peter Chelsom, insisted, which I'm really happy about. Because there were like a lot of turns and serious work going on. And I'm very proud to say that for a minute there, Miramax was putting me up as for best supporting and like the trades. But then they decided to support Finding Neverland. Which movie you say?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, they never heard of that again.
It wasn't even Kate Winslet.
Johnny Depp or
into somebody else.
No, it was Johnny Depp and Kate Winslet.
Oh, was she
Finding
in
Neverland?
Yeah. See?
I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving on. It's J-Lo.
Nobody else does either. So it was an old bank in Winnipeg. That's Canada, everybody.
Yeah.
It's the land that Pemmican built. If you're not familiar with Winnipeg, it's literally in the middle of Canada and the trains would stop there and they would take on more dried buffalo meat
to feed
people to go and build railroad. I don't know what they were doing. There was a gold rush up there.
Yeah.
They were going across Canada.
Yeah.
Winnipeg's right in the middle.
There it is.
It's the Kansas of Canada.
Okay.
So we were in a bank. The people are lovely.
Because
they're Canadians. Yeah.
So we're in this big giant vault and not the vault, but we were in the bank, and that's where we would do our ballroom practices, and that's where we would rehearse. And she was standing with, I think, Tony Dovolani, who's one of my ballroom teachers. Mm-hmm. All these people became pros on Dancing with the Stars.
That's
Karina Smirnoff and Maxim wasn't with us, but there were a lot of other ones. Charlotta Jorgensen was the standard teacher. Mm-hmm. She was on season one. She taught me how to do the waltz and the quick stand that I did with Richard Gere. Mm. These are wonderful
dancers,
Blackpool
yeah.
champions.
Mm-hmm.
They were standing there. I walked behind J-Lo and went, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would have fallen to my knees had I not been afraid of ruining them for the dance. And she was just like, what? And I was like, you smell like candy.
Mm-hmm.
I wanna don't take this the wrong way, but I wanna lick you.
Oh.
Lick. I said
got
lick.
It. Yeah, lick. Lick.
But also eat. And she was like, oh. And I was like, who are you? What are you wearing? And she went, me. And I was like, all right, smart ass. Like, oh, that's just me. And she was like, no, it's me. It's my scent. And And I was like, oh my God, that is the most delicious thing.
But if you
thing.
Buy that, it won't world? Smell like that no. on
she,
you.
She sent it to me. I went to my dressing room the next day. There was an entire box of every single item in that line. I can't remember if it was Still and Glow, but it was the original one, the Glow. Mm-hmm. I did put it on and did not smell.
No, yeah, because it works with no. her pheromones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's mm-hmm. something askew with that.
But it is truly... one of the most delicious smelling human beings ever on the planet. Wow.
Okay, so you got a box from J-Lo. Did you get a box from, did you get like a coconut cake from Tom Cruise?
No. Oh! I did a movie with him and did not get the coconut cake. I'm a little bummed.
You should
Everyone
be bummed.
Everyone loves that damn coconut cake.
We're going to talk to him about it because you deserve a coconut cake.
100%, Tom.
You've heard, obviously, about this coconut cake.
I wrote nice stuff about him in my book and I never got a cake.
Mm-mm, you know what that makes me want to ask you to do? Put your hand in this pot and pull out a topic, because it might not be a cake, but it'll be something else.
Mm-mm. So many topics in there, right? It's random.
It's super random.
Is there one in here?
What are we talking
what
about?
What are you talking about?
Resilience.
Oh, I love that.
I do too. Resilience.
You got to be resilient to do what you two do. That's for sure.
That's
this
for
industry
sure.
making
is right. ridiculous.
Yeah, that is.
No.
So
it's like you're going. Whack-a-mole. Going. Over here. Going. Two times.
Not the two times.
It's true.
Well, that's
man.
Life
it's
in
really
general,
true.
Though.
I mean, no, life but it's is... true. It's life in general, but there's something about the industry that feels a little bit heavier, because when you get those big roles and it's love, affection, joy, happiness, money, success, and then you're like sitting down for years, like, where do I get the next one? Especially in the movie industry, right? Television's a little bit simpler because if you're successful, you can get another one in a couple years or you have to go. But movies are difficult. Resilience is so important. And you can tell the people that aren't truly resilient. I think that they tend to falter in those moments. Mm-hmm. And then we get the scandals and things of that nature mm-hmm. when we're pushing.
Good point. That's a good point. You know, what's wild to me is that you know, we were talking earlier about the golden ticket. I never thought I was going to be on TV or movies. It never was even a goal necessarily mine. I love being on stage. I wanted to be a stage actress. It's what I trained for. It's why I moved to New York. Mm. I did Off-Broadway before I got pregnant, almost immediately after college with my first kid. And I probably would have kept looking to do stage work, except, I mean, here's the truth. You want to know the truth? Mm-hmm. I was always afraid to audition because I wasn't thin enough. I was like, when I lose 10 pounds, I'll go back. I don't want them to see me at this weight, because then that's what they'll think. Then there's not enough roles for the heavy, funny friend. I want to be the fat, funny friend was like the name of my first corporation. Because mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't mind. I'll be Rhoda all day long. That's a more fun role.
Hilarious.
For me. You know, I don't want to be the ingenue. That looks like no fun at all. Mm-hmm. More money. But it doesn't look like any fun.
So much pressure.
And, that's how I was with That's So Raven. I was the funny friend. And I was like, I'd rather play that role. And then they gave it to me and it turned into something else. there's somebody in our life, you told me, that we have a connection with who is, I think, is one of the most resilient people in the industry.
Who?
Whoopi.
Oh, my God. You're bringing up some of my really favorite people. Yeah, she really is. And I got to tell you, she's always been as, you know, she's one of those people that when you look at her on screen and you go, I think I know who she is. And then you meet her and you're like, it's exactly who she is.
Yeah.
That's who she is. So the person who's like going to tell you about yourself, but in a way that's surrounded by love, and that's going to say, why are you doing that? She's the one that told me my first husband came out to me. And we still stayed together for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we went, Whoopi and I did, it was my first big studio movie. And I played her best friend. So we spent a lot of time sitting next to each other, watching basketball players run around. And we learned a lot about each other. And she said, why are you doing that? And I said, because I don't want my kids to have a broken home, because it was so hard on me and my sister. When my parents broke up, my mother lost it. I became the man of the house at 10. You know, I'm like, it was hard. It was, we had no money and I don't want that for my kids. And she said, well, you're not your mother. You're you. And what are you just going to go the rest of your life and not have any sex? And I don't think your kids are going to be very happy if you're going to be a little frustrated. Don't do that. Don't do that to you or to them. And she was the one that really said to me, it's time to move on. And I got home from that movie and I said to him, it's time to move on.
Wow. You know, she was the one. So... She was the one that told me to really pay attention and know that this is a special human. She told me that.
Whoopi,
she does.
She's so special, and we had her on our podcast, and I just remember wanting to take that moment to kind of tell her, but how special I feel she is. But every time I see her, and you kind of have the same energy. It's like when you meet a real human, you know you're meeting a real human. Mm. But Whoopi had this safety to her and this love that was so calming and comforting. And you know, she didn't know me from Adam, right? She loves Raven, obviously, but meets me as like her girlfriend. And she was, and not even girlfriend, because you call
my,
me girlfriend.
You were my girlfriend.
Yeah, but like
labels, you know, don't matter. You know what you were.
Whatever. I'm just saying. But
she said she wanted to hear that it was official. Yeah, she did. She had not heard it yet.
Oh my
and
goodness.
Then Whoopi said it.
Yeah.
And she was like,
"See,
I was like, see?
Shit's on."
Yeah, Whoopi exactly.
Had us into her home, and she was just so loving and present, and like you said, she would tell you about yourself in a funny, you know, mm-hmm. but true, but not offensive way. Like she didn't, she never made anyone feel defensive. And it was just.
But it's like-minded people, right? Like, I, like we said, I feel that that's with who you are. We're in that way as well. And just to bring it back to the resilience, it's like those who have been through something that push through, see the pain in the next person. And like, I attach to you, I understand.
And see the value of this human being. And with her in particular, and I'll say she had me come to her home when I went through a breakup of the person I fell in love with after I broke up with the husband. He broke my heart. I wound up getting back with him and making twins, and he continued to break my heart for 7 years. So I wasn't smart. It's me.
It happens.
I wasn't smart.
Yeah.
I'm a little smarter now. But she said, come to my house. I was sobbing so hard, I couldn't form words. And I don't know what made me reach out to her, but I did. And she was like, get in the car, come to me. And I spent 2 days with her, and she made me eat food.
In Jersey, right? Done.
No, this was out here.
Okay.
And she took care of me, and she had us get on, set up spin bikes, and our spin person came over, and we played That's Not Right. It's Not Right, But It's Okay.
Whitney Houston.
The Whitney song, and we screamed the lyrics as we cycled out all of the pain. And
she's such a
special.
So special.
And she was actually the one she was doing radio in New York, and I went to go do her show on some press tour, and I can't remember what project it was that I was doing. It might have been War of the Worlds. But I went to go do the press. This is right before she took The View. And I said, do you like doing radio? And she was like, no, it's okay. We didn't have the options back then of also being visual.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just radio. She was great at it because she could talk about anything.
Mm-hmm.
She has that ability to talk to a king or a commoner.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Talk to anybody. And I said, well, you know, why are you choosing to do this? She goes, they won't hire me for movies anymore. And I said, what? I mean, this is a woman. If you remember the Oscars, you're going to know what I'm talking about. The Oscars where, I'm not going to say who it was on stage, thanking the people who came before her as she won the award and failed to mention Whoopi as a Black woman who won an Oscar.
Who's
standing right off stage.
Yeah.
And I was furious on behalf of Whoopi. I stood up in my living room yelling at the TV. And I thought that if this business doesn't understand the unique, glorious talent they have in that woman, then shame on all of us.
Shame on all of us. I fully, fully agree. Anybody who meets Whoopi will know this. Anyone who sits in her dressing room, her house, anyone who has a conversation with that woman knows that any woman in this industry who graced our screens after her is because of her. The authenticity that she brought to being a Black chocolate locked.
I'm just gonna say that.
Yeah.
Not Halle Berry-esque world.
Never working off of being a woman, meaning she didn't use sex appeal.
Exactly.
She didn't use
it was
any
about
of
talent.
Yeah.
It was about authenticity. Like, you need to go sit down. You need to give flowers. Every time I see her, you know, I just did The View a couple of weeks ago, and people were like, Whoopi didn't say anything to you. I said, she doesn't need to say anything to me on camera.
They were talking the whole time.
Talking the whole time. You can speak silently to that woman, and she knows your soul from top to bottom. I have a question for you. On your set now, Abbott Elementary, you have some amazing, talented people that have as well a strong resilience factor. Shirley Ralph.
Cheryl.
Wow.
Yeah. 100%.
Forgive me and put his name here.
William Stanford Davis, who plays Mr. Johnson, or Tyler James Williams.
Tyler.
That is one of the smartest people about the industry I've ever met.
You have some amazing, resilient people and actors on your show that have a history so deep. Can you just talk about it a little bit? I love the show. I don't need to talk about the show. I want to talk about the people.
Yes, thank you. And the people are the reason why the show is a success. I mean, our writers are great. Quint is an amazing boss. She put together, she is the best A student you'll ever meet. You know, she had it planned.
Yeah.
What each season was going to be in terms of an arc and specifics and, you know, getting a team of people to put it together. But the reason why the show, I think, is so cohesive and affects people the way it does is because each member of that ensemble cast is bringing something a little bit different. The mix is chemistry, and which you can't make that up. Yeah. Works or doesn't. But also, as you say, the history of the people that are in it. Shirley Ralph, I'm gonna talk about first, because very much like my experience, she had enormous success. People recognize the insane, the presence that she is. We have a fun time with it. We goof on it sometimes, and she'll be on set and some little thing will happen, and all of a sudden, it becomes a speech. And the speech is an award-winning, I want to thank the people of the GOAT Academy for recognizing the look into my eyes.
Ooh, not that. Not yes. That one. I don't
look.
Know.
There's always a part of the word after the word ends.
Oh, yes, for sure.
And understand exactly what you are bringing.
The tonality that you're doing right now is so her. I can't.
Because I'm going to tell you that the effect that she has just standing is different from any other human being. And for her to have gone through, because she went through her time, she had her TV show, she had her heartbreak. You will hear her talk about being in a movie with Robert De Niro and him turning around and saying to her, they will not know what to do with you. Mm. And he was, because he knew
that's
it.
Right.
And this is a man who falls in love with black woman after black woman. He knew how beautiful she was, how exceptional and sexy and vibrant and all of the wonderful things, but they would not give her that starring woman role as a dark-skinned black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's heartbreaking. It had to have been, I put myself in her position at 33, whatever she was, 35, to hear that and go, that's it for me? That's it?
It's painful.
That's it.
Industry.
And, you know, for me, I never wanted something like that. As I said, I never even wanted the screen. I wanted to be a stage actress. And then this came and I went, okay, I guess I'm doing this. But I always thought of myself as the fat, funny friend. I never had those aspirations to be leading woman. So all of that was like bonus and extra. Yeah. For her, she had every reason in the world to expect
leading woman.
Compared to everybody in the world, why wouldn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fact that he was at least honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
See, the problem with our business is people won't tell you. Nobody's going to say to you, yeah, you're cold right now. Your manager might.
But even they won't, because they also have to make sure they stay in your good graces so you don't fire them.
Exactly right. Somebody else is going to get the job.
Exactly. And if you're new to this industry, I think that's one of the biggest lessons that you learn quickly is that people will kiss your ass through thick and thin. And the people who tell you the truth that you get mad that they tell you the truth, you should listen to those people. You know, I've definitely been in rooms with people. I'm like, you know, that's not that funny. You should like get better. I am an actress. I'm like, I didn't say that you aren't. I'm just saying you're not funny. Go take a class. Ain't nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I'm here to tell you the truth of what I see. But that is disrespect. Like, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I think what's different about our business in some ways is, you know, people ask me on social media, I want to be a famous actress. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? And I'm like, I can't tell you how to be famous. That's not that I planned on being.
Yeah.
I can tell you how to go about being an actress.
There you go.
Number one, go find you a show or a class or a stage performance somewhere or your local theater or community theater and learn how to act.
Mm-hmm.
And not just how you act in an improv class. How do you get onto a stage with a bunch of different departments, respect all of them, understand that all of that is helps, that this man is doing is helping us make what we're doing.
Exactly.
What you guys did ahead of time to set this up, all of it
matters. The business of it, the theater of it, not just yourself.
Exactly. So learn how to do that. And then you start to see, is this something I want to put my time into for free? Do you want to pick up your phone and shoot a movie with your friends? Do you want to spend your off hours instead of getting high and playing video games, write a script that reflects something different and truthful and then put that up and put it on YouTube, do whatever.
Yeah.
But you have an avenue to do it that we didn't have. There wasn't this. There was, you made it here in LA or New York.
You go stand in the line with the audition room signing in on a wall with seats that everyone that you see every single time is the same on audition.
Hi, how
you doing?
Oh, I brought brownies this time.
Exactly. You go in, you come out, and you're like, well, there's another one. It's funny because there's some just professional auditioners.
Yeah.
There's some actors, and then there's some stars. And that's the industry we live in.
That's right. And this, when they say, what is that? How do I do it? How do I make it? I don't say resilience. I say, the only secret I can tell you is you can't give up.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that can carry over into professions that are not ours.
It's very true too.
You know, there are many professions where there's at least a trajectory.
Mm.
The young generations don't feel that as much.
No,
we used to say you work, mm-hmm. you get a little bit more money, you get a promotion, you get a little bit more. Oh, now I can afford a condo.
Start in the mailroom, then you can years later become the manager, and then you're you know, there's
this young generation is like, so what? So I can work four times as hard, still not be able to afford any of these things you're talking about. I'm not doing it. And I used to get mad, but they're not wrong. They're not wrong. I mean, hard work is still a great lesson to learn. It's not that you shouldn't learn how to work hard. But do the thing that you love. Learn how to work hard doing the thing that you love. I just tell them you also might have to have, you know, the grind.
Yeah, it's a grind.
You gotta have your support gig, because that's when you're in a creative field that you can't guarantee, you can't live on the promise of that money. But you also have to not give up. When I said they're not wrong, the way that the world has skewed has become so unbalanced in the favor of the owner.
Thank you.
They are the corporatization of America. I don't know if that's exactly what you were going to say.
No.
Has made it so that there is this extraordinary imbalance towards the haves versus the trying to have. And you can't say to people, but if you just work, you can. No, because they gave themselves raises and they said this to everybody else. And so why would you kill yourself putting more money in their pocket and you still can't eat?
And
I don't blame them.
That's what I was gonna say. I think that, you know, being that you have your TikToks and your social medias, and we just had a conversation about a woman who, you know, found a rug in her backyard and now has a million followers.
Oh,
there's so many ways to become quote unquote popular or famous now that hard work isn't valued or cherished. Mm. And there's something to hard work.
You know, maybe that is one of the magic things about the cast. Coming back to that is this cast of people that has seen its shares of ups and downs. You know, William Stanford Davis, who plays Mr. Johnson, this is his first series regular role. The man's been in the business for 40 plus years and has done everything. He's done, you know, the guest star and the guest week and the guest arc and the, you know, getting paid nothing because they're saying we're only top of show. Mm-hmm. And he's been fronted a band. I mean, he's done everything. It's a little bit Mr. Johnson-ish. And he is so incredibly grateful to have a job to go to, not have to worry about being old and poor, like where you don't know where you're going to be when you need to be mm-hmm. in a home yeah. kind of poor. Mm-hmm. And Cheryl and I both know what it is to have that success be right there. Parent
that
trap.
Carrot, that carrot.
Oh, CAA wants to talk to you. No, I'm going to stay with my people because I'm going to be loyal. And then your people are like, yeah, well, you're not on the A list anymore. So now you're here. And I'm like, oh, but I was loyal, I guess. No. Okay. They're not going to be loyal because you're just a piece of the business yeah. to them. And then have real lows. And then I went and did radio. I hosted a radio show for almost 3 years. My kids were in high school and I couldn't go on location. And I'll be honest with you, I couldn't go on location. I also was no longer in my 40s. Mm-hmm. And so the opportunity to go do a part in a movie, I can like that. I still look good, mm-hmm. but it was.
You do look good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But it's, you know, what the business has yep. for you. It's like, oh, you're going to be, you're playing that sexy older woman. You're 37.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy, right? Right?
It's crazy. You know, oh, she's a grandmother. They were offering me grandmother roles when I was 33,
Jesus
34.
Christ.
I was like, but here's the thing. I wouldn't do them because I'm like, I'm not going to tell America that this is what women are supposed to look unless it's in the story. Unless you've got me having a baby at 15 and she has a baby at 17. I'm not going to do that.
Those are those little moments that Hollywood does to society. That little moment right there is why we have physical problems when we look into the mirror
yeah.
because they will hire a 33-year-old to play a mother.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to look. And I'll tell you what, I was too much of a feminist for that. Really? If you would ask me 15 years after that, you know,
maybe
you
should have.
I should have taken it. I could have banked that money. I need that money now. Shit. What's wrong with me?
It's also just
damn society, integrity.
Society with women too, because it's like if you get pregnant at the age of 32 or 33, it's like you're considered a geriatric pregnancy, you know, or
oh,
maybe
wow.
it's a little older than that, like 34. But it's also that's just crazy. And also, you said something that I wanted to speak on, which was how the industry would kind of like push you out or say, no, you can't do this. And you know, you're here today, but then tomorrow you're trash. And I think that in life, even if you're not an actor, you can find those moments too. And you said something where it's like you felt like you were almost right there, right? Like you're in these like big movies with these
yeah,
big stars.
And it's not even I felt it. It was like my team was like, this is it. You're on the list now. And then
right. And I mean, I hear versions of that all the time, right? Even growing up in Los Angeles and the pools of people I grew up with and my dad's career at Warner Brothers, it's like, you know, even what we experienced, you next year, you're going to get the invite to the Vanity Fair party. That'll be
never got
year.
It.
Never got it.
Right. And it's just this thing. But I think what I'm trying to get at is
mad at them.
Both of you left me hanging. Both
oh,
of them.
We didn't know that. Oh, I thought you were just saying,
yeah,
calm down.
Like, wait.
I thought you were going like that.
But this is perfect because this is why we had to say resilient, right?
Yes.
Because here's the deal. I just do this. I could feel
do it every time.
I
yeah.
could right. I could feel really shitty about myself. But I don't. They get it now. But my point is that in my own life, in my own experiences, I have felt like I'm on the sidelines of my own life. And I've said this so many times where it's like, I'm almost there, right?
I thought this was a chair.
No, that's a wall. That I'm almost there, that I am in the right crowd or like my work is finally starting to pick up or I feel like someone just listened to me and they heard what I had to say and they understand who I am, they yeah. value me. And then it's like, but nothing comes of it.
Nothing.
And I think that we all, everyone who's listening, everyone who experiences life can probably put themselves in a position where they feel that way. And the only way to get through, I think, is to continue on your path, to be resilient. And it's so hard because I think that when you get knocked down and knocked down, it's hard to pull yourself back up. You know, if you don't
it
feel rewarded.
It is if you are looking for, and this is why what we talked about in the beginning really it's brings it together. Even though it wasn't planned. When in our business, there is a lot of waiting for somebody else to say yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I depend on some big, powerful person or people or team of people or department to take the meeting. Hope they don't get fired because they said yes. Now we're going to the next meeting. I hope it's the same people. Oh, they left and now I'm screwed. Got to go back, start in the beginning
literally
again.
My life.
Yeah.
So, there's so much for a person as pessimistic as my people are. Sicilians are very pessimistic. It takes an extraordinary amount of optimism to every day wake up and go, I know it sucked. Today's the day. For me and Cheryl, I know it sucked. That's why Cheryl broke into that song at the Emmys. That's why we go to work every day happy at 4:30 a.m. Tyler James Williams, who was Everybody Hates Chris, who knows so much about the business, came up as a kid learning it. So none of it is, I think if you hit when you're a teenager, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Because it's like, here's fame, right?
Yeah.
But I think the people that understand that it's a job,
yes,
and you don't take it for granted.
Yes.
There's so much appreciation,
yeah,
for the just getting up and today's a new day to try to make your shit happen. And oh, by the way, you can in this world, you can, even if you're waiting for the yes from a school that, mm-hmm, you really want to go to. And the school is like, we don't want you. We got enough people, whatever it is. I really want that promotion. You're not getting it this time. There is so much of what you are that doesn't have to rely on somebody else's, mm-hmm, validation of you for you to say, well, they're wrong, I'm great. Marilyn Monroe said, they said to her, what would you have said if 50% of the people that you auditioned for said you had no talent? She said, if 100% said I had no talent, they'd all be wrong.
You have to believe in yourself.
That just comes from you.
But that takes knowing yourself, and that takes a certain sort of something, whether it's was given to you as a kid from your parents and the structure you were born in, or whether you just have that. I mean, no, I know. Not
or,
a lot of
or
people
you come
get it,
to
or
you, it.
Or you come to it. But everyone has their own journey there. But I think that being your own cheerleader in loving yourself and knowing your own worth is so important. But a lot of people don't learn that lesson.
And that's a really good point. You know, I talk about it in the act and in the.
Oh, because you have a comedy special coming up, right?
Yes. And Cheryl and I, it was Cheryl's idea. In fact, she came to see me in Philadelphia last summer because I was starting to tour. And she saw like the first leg of the tour and she fell in love with it. And I thought that she would be horrified. I was a little, I talk about some raw stuff.
Love it.
And I thought she'd be like, oh, I thought there'd be a lot of pearls. And I came off and she was done. I could hear her laugh from on stage because she's got that bark that.
Yeah.
Cheryl's very much like me with the bark laugh. And she was like, girl, you need to be doing this. People don't know that you do this. And then this year, when I was starting to go on, right before we went on hiatus and I was going to go out again, she said, we need to do this as a show. And I said, really? And she goes, yeah, and I want to produce it with you. So we wound up, Workwives Productions produced my comedy special. And we still, because we went right into shooting the show, I haven't finished cutting it. But we will take it out as a series.
It's
not just me, but for other women, other people that their voice doesn't get to get heard.
Good.
For whatever reason. They're a little bit older or they're not the bought commodity.
Yeah.
And we'll give that platform to other people, too.
I love that.
Yeah.
So
we're excited about that. I talk about a little bit about how my generation is so different in that nobody cared where we were ever. Nobody looked for us. We went out in the morning in the summer, didn't come back till the streetlights came on.
Yep.
In between, nobody asked.
Mm-hmm.
We were just gone on bikes or something, going on dangerous rides at the carnival and almost
and coming
dying.
Out of it and coming out of it and being resilient.
Mm-hmm. That was it. You had to, because
mm-hmm.
people weren't paying attention. That's why so many of us were molested, because
yeah.
nobody Jesus. Was watching.
Yeah.
There was no, who was it? Janice Dickinson said, no lifeguard at the pool.
It was a different time. And even our parents, though, like I'll talk about these things a little bit with our parents. And it's like you didn't have option other than what was there. Right. I think in today's world and the kids today, there are so many different vehicles and so many different ways. It's like you grew up in my parents' house and what was put on the table for dinner was put on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like a kid is like, oh, I can Uber Eats this. And if I don't want that, then fine. And I want sushi, but my brother wants lasagna. And like what it doesn't, you know, it's just a different world.
Honey, I know.
And
I don't even know what that feels like.
And
yeah,
that situation, I think.
I know how it was to cook for myself starting at 12.
Me too.
And everybody else in the house.
And that just.
My mother's like, I'm working.
There you go. But that develops a different sense of self and mm-hmm. resilience. And I think that, you know, most of my own resilience has come from having to overcome, I think, like my own mental health and my own struggles in that world and feeling not worthy and feeling like I make mistakes all the time. This lack of perfectionism that I feel like the pressures I put on myself. Yeah. So I have to be resilient and
not lack of perfectionism. Perfectionism.
Oh yeah,
you said
lack of being perfect. I think is where
that's what I meant.
It's
the lack of being perfect, and then having to deal with like, oh my
god,
I'm
human. You said you're from here. You're from out here. So the perfectionism that you feel, was it more based in like your schoolwork or in your like
it was
lookism?
Yeah. No, it was very much my physical appearance for sure.
Yeah,
having to be attractive, which I have never really felt in my life. And so it's like,
you're
like
so beautiful,
so gorgeous.
But then if you don't have that, what do you have to then have, like a great personality or the grades? And I feel like I didn't have any of it. So it was so much self deprecation and loathing that came from this standard.
Yeah.
And when you feel that low about yourself, I think to get up and show up every single day is being resilient, and it just
that's
takes
a win.
It is,
but
exactly.
I think kids in this generation have that same thing. It all comes from this.
100%.
It
They're
comes
all
from
addicted.
This. It's this is the paradigm of this is what I'm supposed to look like. This is how I'm supposed to be. My wardrobe's supposed to get ready with me. I'm like, where are these people getting all these clothes?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I could thrift my ass off, and I'm looking at you got 28 designer purses.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. How many rich men are there out there? And why didn't I get one?
They love them all.
Buy me shit.
You're buying your own shit now.
No, that's for sure. And I always did.
Yep. And that's another thing, like this spoiling oneself. Mm-hmm. You know, nowadays it's like, they're going to get it for me. Somebody else has to get it for me. Somebody else has to get it for me. I grew up in a family where like, you're buying it yourself. I spoil myself. Mm-hmm. And that's hard to do if you are not confident, if you're not, you know, looking, if you're not looking inward for the fix, if you're always looking outward for the fix, if you're always wanting validation from likes or things of that nature. And, you know, the parental, the parent paradigm now, which we don't know, so we can't speak of it.
The parent trap, you mean?
Yeah. the parent trap of it all. It's, it's hard to combat this handheld device at all times, because if you don't give it to them, you're ostracizing them from society. If you give it to them and you put too many locks on, mom, how dare you?
Yeah.
That balance. But I was listening to someone about normality and what normal actually is, and what it is it's the percentage of people in a society at a certain time doing the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that is our normal now. So those who didn't grow up with it, which is us, we're bitching and moaning about it, but having to figure out how to safely make this the norm is kind of in the era that we're in right now. How do we have these little mobile devices that determine our sense of self, that determine our self-esteem? How do parents deal with that?
And think about this. You really want to blow your own mind.
I love doing that.
This is where we are now. And everybody's like, I watch both my boys be completely addicted, not to social media. Neither one of them really ever got into that. It was gaming.
It's still
screen. And I'm telling you that shit's real. When they lose their minds because you're like, I am turning off your ability to go
game
here so that because you're failing school. And these are kids that with their test results should be straight A's, right? You see it in real time. Now throw this onto the log onto the fire. Add AI onto that.
Add AI.
What happens when we have all of the devices that we have, and now we can make it perform for us? You give it a suggestion, all of a sudden this thing is
terrifying.
Sucking your Johnson. It's whatever's going on. Whatever is going
on.
Yeah, that's really scary.
It's scary. And if you look at it, it's like you no longer have to worry about how to learn how to type or learn how to do someone's hair. What that child needs to go to school for this generation is how to prompt correctly. Because that's going to be the need.
But you know what?
By the way, where's the need for us anymore?
I'm not trying to blow my heart out.
You guys will still be needed.
If you can make my AI just a little more toned.
Oh my God.
I'm not even saying smaller.
Just toned.
Robin Wright did a movie about it. You should watch it.
Let's
cheers.
Just toned.
Toast to that. Today we are toasting to someone who shares my name, or my initials rather, Eminem, Marshall Mathers, Miranda Mayday. Anyway, we're toasting to Eminem because he is going to be a grandpa.
That's right.
I just think that's crazy.
Oh God, I need a wrap. I need an Eminem. I need a slim diaper.
Oh my God, that's so good. I need a slim diaper. Can you imagine? Can you believe that Eminem is going to be a grandfather, though?
No.
He's been so many places.
I'm so excited for it because that is the grandfather. I love you, Grandpapa. You know, I love you so much.
Like, we're really evolving and growing up.
But we're really, when Eminem's a granddad, we're old.
Can you imagine being that kid? Oh, and like God, looking back at your grandfather's work.
How old is Eminem?
That's the thing. He's not that old.
He's not even in his 50s.
Is he?
No.
He's like 48, you think?
Yeah, I think he's like
46, 44.
Let's check.
Please check. I can't. I cannot.
Oh my God.
Because he had the baby. He had the oldest one young.
Yeah.
And it is. Teen dad, kind of.
And it is her, right? Does he have another baby?
Oh my God, Eminem is 51.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Good night, America.
We're getting money. Goodbye.
And I'm leaving. Goodbye.
And that's a wrap.
That was fantastic.